2 days ago, Attorney General Bill Barr released a four-page letter summarizing what he claimed were the principal conclusions of the Mueller report. Among other things, Barr said that Mueller had concluded there was not sufficient evidence to prove that the Trump campaign conspired with the Russian government. Barr also said that Mueller did not conclude, one way or another, whether Trump obstructed justice. But Barr himself concluded that Trump had not done so. Mueller's report is still not publicly available, and there may be a fight ahead over disclosure. So when will we see the Mueller report? And what key questions still remain unanswered? Let's get on topic. Welcome to On Topic, a weekly in-depth look at a topic that helps us understand the week's news. My name is Renato Mariotti. I'm a former federal prosecutor, a practicing lawyer, and a CNN legal analyst. And I'm joined by my friend Patty Vasquez, a WGN radio host who will join us regularly on this podcast.
And someone who's just genuinely interested in what the hell's going on. I think that's probably how we should introduce me from now on.
I love that.
This is fascinating.
It is fascinating. I will tell you, though, the exuberance that you show is not entirely, I suspect, that the feeling that many of the listeners of our podcast have. In other words, there's a lot of people out there who I think have, you know, felt disappointed and deflated. But my hope is that none of them were people who are religiously listening to this podcast, because we try to keep things, I think, pretty grounded here. We've been talking a lot, particularly over the last several weeks, about how there had been a lot of, I'd say, runaway analysis out there and expectations about this. And it's my hope that people understood that this was very much within the realm of results that we could expect from Special Counsel Mueller.
And when you say that they're deflated, I think there were a lot of people who were pinning their hopes on this being an incredible exposition of here's how crooked your president is, he's a traitor, all those things. But you've always said all along, one, Mueller will make a decision based on whether or not he can prosecute and get a conviction. Like, that's the bar that he had to be able to surmount. But the other thing is, you've always also, you know, pointed out there are other investigations going on. Not that you should pin your hopes on those either, but there are a lot of moving parts here.
There are. And I would say, though, that, you know, to go to the first point you make, what prosecutors do, they're not priests. They're not God or an angel or something. Their job is not to be a moral arbiter or necessarily to say whether somebody had, you know, potentially done something wrong or maybe did something wrong, or even whether most people on the street would think that they did something wrong. The question is, in a court of law, could you prove that beyond a reasonable doubt? And if you can't meet that standard, Justice Department prosecutors are not supposed to bring charges, period. And you can believe that in a case like this, Robert Mueller was going to be careful and precise. And I think what we saw here was a measure of caution that even I had not anticipated. In other words, one thing that I had tried to tell folks from the beginning is that Robert Mueller was going to be a careful, cautious man. You know, I think, you know, many months ago now, I wrote a piece saying that there wouldn't be a proof of a grand conspiracy, because that's not consistent with what prosecutors do. It's not consistent with his approach. What I was surprised by is that, you know, he didn't tackle even the issue of obstruction of justice and reach what Barr called a traditional prosecutorial decision. And I will just say, when I was a prosecutor, that was, you know, I never had that come up. In other words, you know, I was a federal prosecutor for almost a decade. And when I had a case in front of me, I had to either decide, was I going to prosecute or not? I didn't have like a third option, like where I just shrugged, right? And went to somebody else. And sure, I would discuss it with people. There were certainly times where I got a lot of input from others and help from others. But I never failed to come to a decision. Here, I think there was a sense of extreme humility and a feeling by Robert Mueller that the weight of this decision as to whether to prosecute, or I shouldn't say prosecute in this case, but to conclude that the president of the United States had committed a crime was a lot to place on the shoulders of any one person, and he did not want to bear the weight of that himself.
Okay, leaning into some of the hopes that people have out there, is there any possibility that Robert Mueller withheld some of the information or evidence in this investigation in his report in order to protect it for other investigations that are ongoing? Withhold it from like from Barr so that they don't know what it is that they have and might have in the future?
Okay, so let me make a cookie. There's a lot of different concepts there. Okay. I do not think anything is being withheld from Attorney General Barr. In other words, he is the Attorney General and he oversees the entire Justice Department. Uh-huh. And if there are other investigations, they are being handled by federal prosecutors who ultimately are reporting up to various people who report up to the Attorney General. So I don't believe that Mr. Barr is unaware of anything that's going on. I don't think that Robert Mueller was trying to hide anything. Now, it may be that his report, and I think it's very likely that his report does not cover matters that, for example, are in the Southern District of New York investigation or in other investigations. And yes, there are state prosecutions, but I do not believe that Mueller thought that his principal conclusions in this report were likely to be altered by one of these other investigations. And if he did think so, I expect that will be played out in the report, and I would put that in the category of things that we can see. But if it's not spelled out there directly, then I don't think that is something that is a reasonable possibility. And I will also say that, you know, and I think we can talk a lot with our guests about this, but I will just say that there are things within the realm of possibility of what Barr, you know, maybe not disclosing here. But I think that if the rest of the report was such that Barr was going to be embarrassed by taking the one sentence or two or three out of context, I don't think that would be the case. In other words, I think we can expect that there's a lot of evidence here that may be damaging to individuals, including potentially Donald Trump, that is in there despite that conclusion. And that is not unusual, just so everyone understands. Prosecutors all the time are faced with conduct that they find wrongful, that they find abhorrent. I mean, literally the worst case that I ever had, the worst conduct that I ever had, where people were being cheated out of their homes and their life savings, I could not prosecute because I had not insufficient evidence. That happens. But that doesn't change necessarily the underlying conclusion. What I think that may be present, I don't know one way or the other. But what won't be there, I think, is Mueller saying, well, here's a temporary conclusion, but there's some other case that may totally change this conclusion that's still ongoing and it'll get wrapped up in 6 months. I don't see that.
Well, that's the problem a lot of people had when Comey came out and made that proclamation about Hillary Clinton and that, she did things that were inappropriate, but not necessarily prosecutable and, you know, kind of shared his opinions on how she had acted professionally or unprofessionally.
Yeah, I think what happened there was Comey said, you know, this is over and we've made our decision. And then he was worried that what was going to happen is after the election, there would be some email out that could bear on something and that he would look like he hid something. I think he was, that's what he was trying to accomplish. I wouldn't hold Comey up as an example of what prosecutors or the Justice Department should have been doing. He's been roundly criticized for what he did. So I think what I would say for Mueller is, I think he felt like, and I don't know what exactly was in his mind, but I suspect that he felt that that getting this report out there in this form was in the public interest, that it was unlikely to change. Now, it doesn't cover everything. In other words, I carefully chose my words when I wrote the intro here. I talked about how he said that there was that according to Barr, that he found there was not sufficient evidence to prove a conspiracy with the Russian government or members of the Russian government or I think agents of the Russian government. I don't remember the exact word. But he didn't say anything about individual Russians or former Russian government officials. I don't know what the report's going to say about it because I've read the same thing you guys did, which is four pages from Barr in which there's just a few very, you know, selective quotes from the Mueller report. So, I think there's a lot of questions going forward. But one thing I will just say to all of you is that I think I want all, I think we should all approach this from a perspective of trying to understand what happened, with trying to get to the bottom of this for the sake of our country and understanding what happened, but that we should have reasonable expectations about what is going to be contained in the report. In other words, I am very critical of Bill Barr's letter and his decision-making within it on obstruction of justice. And I wrote a piece in Politico magazine. It's like my premier column for them, right? I'm more of a regular columnist for
Congratulations.
Them. Congratulations.
Yeah, thanks. Well done.
Thanks. But I you know, when in that column, I very harshly described his decision, and we can talk more about that. But that doesn't, I would not expect that, you know, when Barr says something in that letter that I think there'll be a lot of context that may be bad, but one would think that he would not put himself out there so much that, you know, the principal conclusions that he quoted are wrong, or the words that he quoted from Mueller are not the actual words in the report. I would be very surprised if there are quotation marks around words that don't actually don't actually exist within the Mueller report.
And I think what smarts for a lot of people is that now, you know, Trump and all of his allies are using this, they're swinging it like a bat, you know, as a way to criticize and to really squash opponents now and say, look, you know, we've been the victims of this witch hunt and this illegal investigation.
Well, I think, you know, here's the thing. I mean, Trump and his allies have some, there's some justification in them saying, look, this conclusion was favorable to us. There was not a conclusion that he violated the law. I appreciate that people are saying, look, that's a low bar. That's not what we should expect from the president. That's all true. And I am a harsh critic of Donald Trump's, okay? But whenever anybody is the subject of a federal criminal investigation, there's no doubt that they are going to pop a champagne cork when they find that the prosecutor's not going to charge them, right?
Sure, some vindication.
I would think they feel vindicated to an extent, right? Now, that doesn't mean they're completely blameless or exonerated, I think, to use the term that Mueller, you know, used in the report, according to Bill
right.
Barr, okay? But that does mean that, you know, they can have a moment of celebration. Now, I will say, though, that, you know, part of what happened here is I do believe, and I think I wrote a piece, and it was at Time magazine a couple months ago or a month and a half ago about this, that the discussion that had turned this into a referendum on quote-unquote collusion, I think set this up for Trump. In other words, Trump kept saying no collusion, no collusion, no collusion. And the answer from his critics, from people more on my side of the aisle, was, yes, collusion, we're going to prove it. And what that meant was the entire report became a referendum on collusion, when really, based on public evidence, the more obvious crime that had been committed was obstruction of justice. And it was very unlikely that prosecutors were going to be able to put enough evidence to prove a criminal conspiracy. I appreciate that there were, unfortunately, legal supposed analysts and commentators out there commenting otherwise, and some of whom I respect, some maybe not. But
name teasing,
no,
teasing.
We're not doing that.
Know.
But the point is just that, unfortunately, that fed into something that these conclusions are a harsh rebuke to some critics who were predicting, or at times saying it was rather inevitable that there would be, you know, a criminal conspiracy that was proven.
Yeah, they were counting on it, clearly. But it's hard. You start getting that mental state, and you watch the news cycle, and then all the indictments. I think a lot of people were like, well, look, you know, people are lying under oath. They're covering up something. There has to be some there.
Well, there, you know, certainly I will just say, regardless of criminal proof or not, there was some there in the sense that there was some very shameful activity. Donald Trump Jr. may have wanted to hide the fact, for example, that he was so eager to get help from the Russian government. I mean, that alone should be embarrassing to the man, regardless of whether or not
sure.
It was criminal.
That implies they have
shame. Reasonable doubt.
You're adorable.
Oh, there you go. But, you know, there, that if I was his lawyer, that might be the way I'd go with that. In other words, look, yeah, he lied because it was embarrassing.
Right.
All right. I think it's we got to bring in our guest, who's absolutely fantastic. She is a frequent guest here on our this podcast, Barb McQuaid, who is the former United States Attorney for the Eastern District of Michigan under President Obama. She's also an MSNBC legal analyst. You see her most days on MSNBC, and she's also somebody who I think is careful and grounded, and that's one of the things that I appreciate about her. Welcome back to the podcast, Barb. Thank you so much for joining us again.
Oh, thanks, Renato. Glad to be with you.
Well, I've got to say, Barb, you know, this is obviously a story that both of us have, you know, provided analysis on for quite some time. This was obviously a very expected, you know, kind of anticipated event. It was, in some ways, I feel like we don't have a complete answer yet. And I wonder, just as at a top level, what your reaction was to seeing that short letter from Attorney General Barr.
Well, it makes me want to know more, of course. It is a short letter that, as he said, the principal conclusions of Robert Mueller are included there. But we've also heard reports that Robert Mueller issued a comprehensive report. So I'm, you know, like everyone else, I suppose, dying to see the whole thing. But I suppose one big picture thought that I had is, one, I'm glad that a special counsel was appointed. I'm glad that he wasn't fired. He was allowed to complete his work. And it also stated the Friday letter that Robert Mueller had never been overruled when he proposed some sort of action, as the Attorney General could do and then would have to report. So I was gratified by those things. There was then the conclusion that Robert Mueller was not able to establish that President Trump conspired with Russia to interfere with the election. And I want to talk in a minute about how that has been, I think, misreported a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And then the other thing, of course, which really struck me as odd, was that Robert Mueller did not reach any conclusion with regard to obstruction of justice, but William Barr did. And both aspects of that is surprising, that Robert Mueller did not, and that William Barr, who is part of the executive branch chain of command, mm-hmm. jumped and said, but I will, and I find there is none. So all of those things leave me wanting a little more information.
Yeah, I thought I think those are all great points. And I guess one thing that I agree with all of those things, although I'm very interested to hear what your thoughts are regarding that conclusion that supposedly is quoted from the report by Barr that Mueller was not able to establish a criminal conspiracy between, I believe it was something like members or officials within the Trump campaign and the Russian government. Was the wording, something like that.
Yeah. And that is interesting, too, that it's limited to government. It doesn't talk about other officials. But the part that I want to clarify is the way this is being reported by Trump and by members of the public and members of the media. And I think you have to be careful not to overstate it that way, which is that Mueller found that there was no collusion. That is not what Mueller found. Mueller was not able to establish a conspiracy. And those are two very different things, which makes me want to see what he did find in the full report. You know, just to give you an example, sometimes my father-in-law is not able to find his car in the parking lot. That doesn't mean the car is not in the parking lot. It just means he's not able to find it. Now, in defense of Robert Mueller, he's probably a much better investigator than my father-in-law. And he had a lot of help and a lot of time to look for what he was looking for, and did not establish that there was a conspiracy, which is, you know, a legal term that means an agreement with an overt act. And so I take it, and that's a significant finding, and that's a very important part of the report. But those are two very different things. And I would like to see all the facts that Robert Mueller did find with regard to connections between Trump and Russia and what communications there were, what context there were with people who weren't within the Russian government but were other Russian officials. I think all of that information is very important for the public to see because, democracy requires an informed electorate. And even if it did not legally amount to the crime of conspiracy, I still want to know what facts there are about connections with Russia so that we can have good information about President Trump.
You know, it's very interesting, Barb, to hear you say that. I mean, one thing that I think is very unhelpful here is that the media and the public really view this through the lens of whether or not there would be proof of collusion. I will tell you, you know, I have been analyzing and giving my thoughts about this matter ever since Comey was fired. And early on, I kept telling people constantly, collusion is not a legal term. It means nothing to me. I can't tell you anything about collusion. And, you know, I tried very hard to push against that, and I was completely unsuccessful. Obviously,
I know you did. I know you've been preaching that for a long time.
Yeah, and the bottom line is, of course Mueller wasn't trying to find that. And so for people, but I will say, you know, to me, it's one thing that I find frustrating, though, I would say, it is now everyone's like, well, yeah, he didn't find proof of conspiracy, but what about collusion? Well, collusion is something you guys all made up. So to me, it's kind of an unfair thing now to be saying, like, what does that even mean, Barb? I don't know what collusion means, really.
No, I agree with you that it's not really a very helpful term. And, you know, the origin of it actually came from Rod Rosenstein. I don't know if you've ever looked at that memo that got filed in some of the Manafort litigation, where Manafort was challenging the constitutionality of the appointment of Robert Mueller. And we saw sort of an expanded list of the matters that Robert Mueller was supposed to investigate. And he used the word collusion in that document. And so maybe that's where it came from. But I agree with you. I think it was sort of a simple word that would encompass this whole concept of really conspiracy with Russia to interfere with the election. But I guess it's fewer syllables than that.
Yeah, I see. Here's the thing. You know, I for a long time was trying to push back with people. I mean, I had some tweets. I'm like, is this collusion? I remember, for example, when Manafort and Klimnik got charged conspiring with each other to obstruct justice. I'm like, is that collusion? What do you guys even mean by collusion? And what it came down to is what you said. But to me, that's almost a higher bar than conspiracy. In other words, you could have a criminal conspiracy with the Russian government to do something very narrow. But what that's almost suggesting is if that seems to be what people thought collusion was this criminal conspiracy with the Russian government to influence the election in some way. To me, that was such a high bar. I've written multiple pieces talking about how I never thought that. I thought that was a very unrealistic thing to expect Mueller to prove. To me, if that's the bar, we should not be surprised that Mueller didn't clear it. But at the same time, you know, it also seems to me that the fact that the public or the president are making a big deal about not clearing it seems to me to unfortunately be because that was the way the discussion has been framed, for better or for worse.
Yeah, and that's why I think seeing Robert Mueller's full report would be very useful to the public. Now, you know, we can talk about that, some of the reasons we may not see all of it. I think we're going to see at least more of it. That's what William Barr promises. But it would be useful, I think, for the public to see what the facts are. Even if they didn't not amount to the crime of conspiracy as a matter of law, were there nonetheless some, you know, shady activity that went on that the public ought to know about? You know, we know about at least some snippets of reports of a meeting in Trump Tower to talk about getting dirt on Hillary Clinton. Well, maybe that doesn't amount to conspiracy, but it still kind of makes you feel not so great about those conversations. What, you know, what else happened so that the public can, I think, draw its own opinions about how they regard this president and this presidency?
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. I mean, the way I try to look at this is, I mean, what we had is a counterintelligence investigation that was looking at links and or coordination. That was what was in the original memo. The one you talked about kind of was a private memo that came later. Mm-hmm. And we only seen a small part of it. And that's a counterintelligence concept, links and or coordination. And that's problematic and concerning to every American, whether or not there are links and or coordination with a presidential campaign or associates of it. And that we should all be concerned about as Americans. That's, to me, separate and apart from the criminal law issues about various crimes that could arise over the course of that. You know, and we've learned about some of them, and then there's others that apparently they may have been unable to establish.
Yeah, and I think the other thing that, you know, this obstruction conclusion, non-conclusion, kind of begs the question about to what extent did Mueller and Barr base their decision on this idea that a sitting president cannot be indicted. And so all this information, even if it does not amount to a violation of the essential elements of a statute in the criminal code, is it nonetheless information that Congress should have to make a decision about whether it's an impeachable offense? And so I think, you know, this non-decision on obstruction, when Robert Mueller declined to reach a decision, was that because he thought it was not within his purview to make a charging decision? Did he expect William Barr to jump in and say, then I will? Or did he intend to defer to Congress on that decision? And so, again, I think we just need to see the full report so that we can have a little more window into the reasons for that kind of non-recommendation.
Yeah, I will say, Barb, I think that, you know, it's not in my experience ever as a former prosecutor to not come to a decision. But obviously, I never had a case in which the weight of the world was on my shoulders the way it was for Robert Mueller. I feel like it's understandable why he may not have wanted to bear that burden himself. I mean, do you think that may have been the call here? He's just being cautious because he thought this would ultimately end up in Congress's hands anyway. So he wanted to lay out the facts and let them make the call.
Yeah, I don't know, but you just said something really important, I think, that maybe listeners don't all appreciate, which is, similarly, I have never seen a case where the prosecutor just says, well, here are all the facts on both sides, and I'm just going to leave it up to someone at a higher level to make the decision. I don't know which way to recommend. This is beyond my pay grade. That's not how I've ever seen it work.
Right.
Maybe it has at some point in history, but I've never, and again, this is a very unusual scenario, but ordinarily, even when a U.S. attorney is involved in a very high-profile case, what he or she typically does is make a recommendation to the attorney general and says, we've investigated this case. We'd like to go forward. We propose filing charges. Here's what we propose. Or we propose a declination. Here's what we propose. And then it's for the attorney general or whoever the decision maker is to approve or reject that recommendation. It is never the case that I've ever seen that they say, here are the facts both ways, you make the call, boss. That's just not how it's done. And I think in this case, while it's unusual, I think it's an even stronger case to not defer to the boss to make the decision, because the whole purpose of having a special counsel appointed was to insulate him from the normal executive branch chain of command to ensure that the public had confidence that this decision was not based on politics. And so it just seems so odd to me that Robert Mueller would not at least make a recommendation. And so it does suggest to me, as you say, it may be because he was contemplating that this was not a matter that was for the executive branch, but was instead for Congress as a matter of impeachment.
Right. I think that's right. I mean, from my perspective, look, if I was Robert Mueller, I would have made some sort of, you know, recommendation or decision, however you want to phrase it, of what I concluded, mm-hmm. because I would think, look, I am a prosecutor looking at this, knowing the evidence, having, you know, sat in on some of these interviews,
yep.
and looking at the evidence myself. I'm going to be better able to make this judgment than
yep.
a random House member might, for example,
yep.
Who's not mm-hmm. a trained prosecutor. Okay. But even if I could imagine someone, particularly somebody who's as careful and thoughtful as Mr. Mueller, deciding, look, I just think that there are some really challenging questions here. Reasonable minds can differ. And I mm-hmm. think if the House of Representatives has to make this call eventually, let them make the call. While I wouldn't have made the same decision, I respect that point of view. What I find very unlikely, but it's possible, is that he contemplated handing this off to a man who had already expressed views on the issue before he became attorney general, and I think was widely perceived to be biased on that issue. Now, I will say that I think Barr doing this is a savvy partisan political move because it sets expectations. In other words, you know, both of us, I'm sure, remember the election of 2000. And I think that if on the election day, if it said Gore is the president and elect instead of Bush, you know, it would have set expectations differently if Bush was the one trying to get, you know, overturn a decision versus Gore. And I think here Barr has set the put as the, you know, the starting point. There's no obstruction here. And so now, later on, finding, oh, Mueller actually didn't quite say that, and it's not cool. The evidence actually looks pretty damaging. I think it makes it harder. In fact, what we've seen already is multiple Republican senators like Susan Collins and Mitt Romney already saying, yeah, there's nothing there on obstruction.
And that's a really interesting point. You know, it's a lot like anybody who watches football, NFL football, knows that a call that was made on the field does not get overturned unless there's what's clear and convincing evidence or something, right? There is a presumption that the status quo will remain in place. And so it may be that even if William Barr thinks that Congress is going to take its own look at this, that he has now sort of set the stage that it's going to take a lot more for them to kind of overrule his decision that's already been made. That's a really interesting way of looking at it that I hadn't thought about. But I think you may be right about that. Now, I will give him, you know, some good faith benefit of the doubt that I'll bet this is what he believes. You know, he wrote that 19-page memo to the Department of Justice before he was the Attorney General, unsolicited, to share his opinion that a president cannot obstruct justice when he exercises some constitutional power. The only way he could obstruct justice is by destroying evidence or threatening a witness, but by merely firing Jim Comey as the FBI director, by merely asking Comey to let this investigation against Flynn go, those kinds of things, even if he did them, as a matter of law, cannot amount to obstruction of justice because he has the constitutional authority to do that. There are, you know, others who disagree with that, including me, that says that any power that is abused can still be considered a violation of the law. And if he had done so corruptly to end a legitimate investigation, then I think that's a basis for obstruction of justice. But nonetheless, William Barr made that known. He talked about it at his confirmation hearing. And it may be that that's what he found here with regard to obstruction of justice, that even though he did all these things, it's impossible for him to obstruct justice because he's the president. And so I want to know that, too. Was that the basis?
Yeah. So I think that really is a great segue to, I think, a very important discussion for you and me to have, which is based upon the four corners of what Barr said, you know, how can we understand his reasoning on obstruction of justice? And that, I think that's very interesting. It's something I grappled with when I wrote that column the day that the letter was released. And here's what I would say there. First of all, he says that there are difficult issues of law and fact. Okay, that's the first thing. This, the one that you just identified, Barb, I think is potentially what he may have had in mind is a difficult question of law. But there are separately in his mind difficult issues of fact. And then he lists only one factor that I recall that he, you know, named explicitly as weighing in favor of that conclusion, which was that there was no conclusion as to a specific underlying crime, specifically the conspiracy count. Although we move back to that, I think that's flawed. Then he says, my view about the president, he explicitly says, he tries to like box out what you just said by saying that my view about the president not being able to obstruct justice in this manner has nothing to do with this, which I don't know if anyone actually believes, but he tries to say that.
Yeah. And I think what he says is he footnotes the OLC opinion about not indicting a sitting president. And so I think those are two different things.
You're right.
So he talks about one. Well, yeah. So he says this matter about whether you can indict a sitting president is not part of our consideration. But, you know, this his sort of broad view of executive power, I wonder how that relates to that question. But you raised something interesting there that I had overlooked. You know, I looked at questions of law, you know, difficult questions of law that I took to mean that, his interpretation of executive power. He also references difficult questions of fact. I wonder what that is. And again, another reason why I think we need to see the full Mueller report. Are there factual disputes about what happened? Did Robert Mueller reach firm conclusions about the facts? Were there, you know, President Trump has denied that he asked Jim Comey to let it go with Michael Flynn. Did he make a finding about that as to which version of the facts he believes happened? Or does he think it would be unseemly to reveal to the public that they think President Trump lied? I'd be curious what he thinks about the facts, not as well as the law.
Yeah, I mean, what I would say with that, Barb, you know, what my kind of theory of what that might be is that, you know, for example, Trump's defense almost certainly would be that he genuinely believed that Comey was awful, and because in part because there was nothing to the Russia investigation, and yet Comey was pushing forward with it anyway. Now I appreciate that does not mean that the president should obstruct justice, but of course that ties into the fact that he's the president of the United States. He oversees that. And if there was ultimately a conclusion that nothing could be proven, then that may feed into, you know, him being able to say, well, yeah, I knew that Comey was pushing forward a groundless investigation. And so I thought as president, I could save us all a lot of time and resources and the public a lot of headache by just derailing this and saying, look, that never happened. Let's stop wasting our time. And his intent was because he thought that was a groundless investigation. That's possibly where they're going with that. I mean, that's at least something that possibly, you know, would occur to me if I was on the other side trying to defend Trump in this scenario.
Yeah, and I think that's an important point because people are either, I don't know, deliberately reading what they want to read or missing the point of what Barr said there, where he is not saying that because no underlying crime of conspiracy in this case was proven, that means you cannot obstruct justice. He says just the opposite, in fact. The fact that there was no conspiracy found is not dispositive with regard to obstruction of justice, as you have just said. And some people are maligning him for that. But what he does say is because there was no underlying crime, though, it could be pertinent to the question of his intent to obstruct justice. You have to show that a person had a corrupt intent and that there was an ongoing proceeding. And so if there was no intent to derail a legitimate investigation, and he knew that the Trump-Russia collusion story was groundless, then, you know, that is relevant to deciding whether he had a corrupt intent in asking Comey to stand down. So I thought he framed that properly, but I think it's getting misanalyzed a little bit, maybe by people who are reading into it what they want to read into it.
Well, I will say part of the challenge, Barb, is explaining this in a pithy way, in a short way, right? In other words, when I wrote the column about Barr, I had to explain in basically a paragraph or two what was problematic about that reasoning. And I think if I was going to spend 500 words or 1,000 words expounding on it,
yeah,
we can do that here. What I would say is Barr did not provide anything amounting to a real legal analysis of why he came to that conclusion. Nothing even close to what one would expect for a decision of that import. But he only listed one factor. And to me, if that's the best factor you have, that's a problem because it's a fairly, to me, fraught factor, and it's a fairly thin read. Now, what I would say is that it may, in context, and I tried to give it some context that might be helpful to him, and if that really is what he's trying to say, he may have been able to do so in a more fulsome way or in a more artful way. But essentially if you just take it on face value, what he says is like, well, the underlying conclusion was that there was no crime there. And so therefore that weighs in favor. That may have, that goes to his state of mind and meant that he was not, you know, he didn't have that intent because he knew all along that there was nothing there. The problem is, for example, part of what he's saying with the let it go thing that you mentioned is to let Flynn go. And we know Flynn, you know, at least committed some crime, obviously was lying to the FBI. Yeah. So it doesn't really make a lot of sense. But, you know, for me, I had to try to encapsulate that in four sentences. So I don't know how I don't even remember how I did so. But I do think that Barr has some explaining to do about that. But, you know, there likely is some challenging factual issue there.
No, you're right. And I think his explanation so far is not perfectly satisfying. Now, you know, in his defense, I'm sure he was trying to get this thing out over the weekend. I'm sure he set up a lot of pressure for himself by sending that letter to Congress Friday night and saying, I plan to brief you as soon as this weekend. Yeah, I don't think he was going to blow his own deadline of this weekend. He thought he could get it done, in part, no doubt, because he was receiving regular briefings from Mueller and his team, and that was not the first time he heard what their conclusions were going to be. But I do think it's worthwhile to get a better analysis of why he concluded that there was no chargeable offense for obstruction of justice. We really only did about a paragraph on all of that. And as you say, he doesn't address the Flynn investigation per se, which is a great point. Even if he thought the so-called collusion conspiracy charge was baseless, he knew by then that Michael Flynn had lied to the FBI. And so that is a significant crime that he may have been attempting to cover up. So I don't think it's satisfying to just hear that, well, there was no provable case of conspiracy, so therefore no provable case of obstruction. It's enough that he tried, if he tried, and I think the public deserves more answers about William Barr's analysis on that question.
And one of the questions that's coming up quite a bit is, if Mueller believes that Barr is manipulating the report, does he have a path to approach Congress to correct that? Is there any legality to
that? Boy, I don't know. That's a really great question. So what if Mueller is sitting there thinking, I can't believe you just did that. I meant for Congress to have that question. And here you are, Barr, jumping in and taking it for yourself. You know, as a good soldier that he is, I don't know that he would volunteer that information. If he were subpoenaed to testify, he could be protected by executive privilege as part of the deliberative process, or even just the president's not involved, so not presidential communications, but the deliberative process privilege is just a subset of executive privilege. But I think that's the kind of thing where, you know, the full parameters of executive privilege are not known, and we could see a court fight on that if Robert Mueller wanted to talk about it. You know, would he hold a press conference tomorrow to say that's not what I found? Doesn't seem like his character or his style of work, but I suppose if he were so outraged that Barr had acted illegally here, I guess he could say it, but he does not have a clear path for doing it. What do you think, Renato?
Yeah, I think what he would do, I think what would happen, Barr, you know, if he intended this for this to go to Congress and Barr did this, my thought is Mueller's going to say nothing. When and if he gets called by Congress to testify, yeah, he's going to say, well, my thought was to leave this to the American people. It's clear in the full text of the report that that's what I intended. But Barr certainly had the authority to do this. You know, I mean, he could, you know, he's the attorney general. He can render whatever legal opinions that he wants to do.
Can you imagine the House not calling Mueller? This seems like it would be
no,
at the top of their list.
I can't. Yeah. I mean, one thing.
Yeah, I agree, Patty.
Yeah, and I think that really is a good segue to a kind of another big topic that I'd like to discuss with you, Barb, which is, you know, everyone is focused on the disclosure of the report right now. There's a lot of discussion there and about that. And, you know, one view I disagree with, and I think everyone who's listened to the podcast knows, is this notion that, oh, the full report will just be made to the public and existing law permits that. There's a lot of complicated issues like grand jury material and classified material that would prevent that. So let's just talk about, from your perspective, Barb, how do you see this fight over disclosure of the report playing out?
Yeah, it's hard to say without knowing what it looks like. I had expected that Robert Mueller, full well knowing that the public is going to want to see this thing, would have written it in a way so that parts of it could be public, you know, with a executive summary and then a classified addendum or an addendum that contains the grand jury information or something like that, so that, William Barr and other decision makers, other people, high-level people at DOJ could read it. There'd be a permanent record of what the full report said, but you could quite easily and quickly say, and here's the public version. I'm surprised that Barr's letter says, we're going to spend the next few days carefully going over and sort of scrubbing this for grand jury material. How could you not have done that already? It struck me as either not thinking this through or wanting to build in a little bit of delay time once it was public. But no doubt there is certain material that probably cannot be disclosed to the public. There's grand jury testimony, grand jury records, any classified information that they obtain to the intelligence community. But as you know, there are many ways that you can deal with that. You can frame things in the passive voice. You can use redactions to remove references to materials. You can write it in such a way that is a high-level summary that removes specific references to grand jury testimony. So I think there are ways to get more of the report in public. I guess I don't know what the percentage would be, but I also believe that some of it will probably likely remain sealed from the public forever.
Yeah, I suspect that there's more here going on, too. I think you're right, Barb, that I'm surprised that that these issues of redaction weren't kind of resolved in the front end. If I was Attorney General Barr, knowing that the weight of history is upon me here, this is a historical investigation, and I'm, the public is eagerly anticipating this, I would have been trying to include in that letter a lot of block quotes from the report, as much of the, as much as I could from the report, and I would be rolling it out. I mean, as much as possible. Here's 10 pages that, you were whatever, here's as much as I can give you right now, and so on and so forth. It seemed to me, Sarah Sanders referred to executive privilege and how they were going to fight to protect the office of the presidency. I wonder if that's what's going on here. And I have to say, I think that that is very weak claim, the executive privilege claim. And I think it's a weird fight for them to have. I don't know if they want it, for whatever reason, politically, maybe they want to have that fight. But, Gerald Nadler, the chairman of the House Judiciary Committee, my understanding is he subpoenaed the report with a due date of April 2nd, the full report. And it seems to me if one human being in America deserves to see the full report, it's that guy, because his committee is the one that would be investigating articles of impeachment. And he presumably should be able to see the results of an investigation into potential wrongdoing by the president of the United States. So I don't see how you could possibly have a viable executive privilege claim as to that guy. So I'm curious what your thoughts are.
I agree with you, and I also think the Intelligence Committee, to the extent that there is any classified material, the Intelligence Committees were created along with FISA to say, there needs to be oversight on the executive branch's work when it comes to classified material, and so the Intelligence Committees exist so that they can oversee that work, so I would include them in that. And even as to grand jury material, I think that permitting Jerry Nadler to see that, his committee to see that, I think you could maybe make an argument even under 6E that they are federal officials looking at it in the scope of their prosecutorial decision-making authority, since they have the authority to instigate impeachment proceedings. So I do think that Nadler and company, even if the public doesn't get to see it, Nadler and his committee probably will prevail in getting to see it.
Yeah, I just can't imagine, you're saying either you're going to take a look at that rule and fit them into the rule, or you're going to say, as applied to them, the rule is unconstitutional, because there's no way a rule can prevent the House Judiciary Committee from being able to carry out its law, its constitutional function, and a pretty important one at that. So, I have to say, I don't completely understand the strategy there. I do think that it's useful. I think expectations of in the sense of release the full report immediately are silly. I didn't expect that to happen, but I do think it's in everyone's best interest. And that includes Republicans, Democrats, I think, from the perspective of history, to have as much of this thing out there as possible, because otherwise any piece that's redacted, unless elected leaders on both parties saw it and are like, yeah, this is something that's a secret that we can't let the world know because it'll undermine our national security. Unless something like that happens, I think there'll be theories and speculation that'll go on for many years and decades to come.
Yeah, and, you know, our country is founded on the idea that information yearns to be free, that an informed electorate is essential to a democracy. And so I think there is a push for it. You know, there are limitations to what can be disclosed, but the Department of Justice itself has guidance on what it discloses to Congress. There is a letter from 2000 that someone at DOJ prepared that kind of lays it all out. And their default position is to disclose to Congress all information. That is limited by some of those things we've discussed, like executive privilege, classified information, privacy rights of individuals. There are a few things that can be held back, but you have to be able to articulate with regard to each piece of information what is the basis for withholding it, because the default is that it should be turned over to Congress. And so I'm hopeful that much of it, if not all of it, will be turned over to Congress, and that they can act in on behalf of the people as serving as a watchdog in their oversight role.
Yeah, I have to say, I think that this will eventually get itself worked out. But in the meantime, the goalposts or however you want to look at it have been set. I think that there's definitely a debate now about whether or not that we should move on. And, you know, I will say I've privately had lawmakers ask me what my thoughts are about, you know, whether or not we should be, you know, pushing for disclosure and how and what. And, you know, from my perspective, for the sake of our nation and history, we need this out so that people know what happened, people know what Mueller found. I think it's an important thing, and it's not about winning some political whatever. I was always skeptical, frankly, that you would find 20 Republican senators who would want to remove Donald Trump from office in any event, which is what would be necessary for that to happen. But I think that what is important for the perspective of our nation is that everyone feels like this is a matter that's been properly investigated and that they can you know, they can feel confident about the results.
Yeah, what's interesting about it is I feel, you know, the obviously the biggest question here was the conspiracy with Russia. And I feel pretty satisfied with Robert Mueller's opinion on that. You know, I have confidence that he looked hard. He didn't find anything. Okay, you know, there's a lot of, you know, questions I still have about that. You know, if there's nothing there, why did Michael Flynn lie and go to prison for it?
Yes,
why did Michael Cohen lie?
But
he looked pretty hard. I have confidence in that was his conclusion in the end. If Robert Mueller had said, I find no case of obstruction of justice, I think I'd be satisfied with that too. But the part that leaves me very unsatisfied is his declination to make a decision. I'm not going to make a decision here. And then Barr's jumping in to make that decision. I would feel a lot more confident if we just saw the report in the absence of his own recommendation. And I'm hopeful that we're going to get there, and I think Congress will certainly demand it.
Before we go, I know that we've taken so much of your time, and I appreciate that you've always been so gracious with sharing so much of your information, your intellect, and perspective. I'm wondering, as you mentioned about Mueller's report and what we might be satisfied by, do you think we've learned enough to maybe prevent some of the same things from happening in 2020? Are we in a better position to defend the integrity of our elections after Mueller's investigation?
So I don't know the full scope of that answer. I'd say yes, to some extent. I think the public who's been paying attention has been educated about the ways that Russia, who is an adversary, tries to use social media as a divisive tool. I'm hopeful that people who were closely following and believing what they read on social media will be more skeptical consumers of what they see on there and realize that not every user is who they purport to be. I think the social media companies have gotten a little bit of comeuppance about it, and I think we're well positioned or better positioned now, maybe for some legislation on people's data privacy online, knowing how information can be used and abused online. And I guess we all should be more cautious in the way we use our email, knowing that it could be hacked and used as a weapon the way it was by Russia. So I think we've all learned some important lessons there. I don't know what else is learned in the intelligence community. I'm sure there's much more that has been learned there about how Russia and possibly other adversaries could use our elections and tamper with them. And I'm hopeful that there are other lessons that can be shared with state election officials to prevent actual hardware from being interfered with, election results being tampered with. So I think we've learned some things, and we probably have a little more to learn. And I'm hopeful that the Mueller report can be disclosed so that we can maximize our learning opportunity.
I agree.
Yeah, I have to say, there's already some legislation. I know our friend of the podcast, Ro Khanna, was just introduced something today on protecting our, having more cybersecurity and some of that on some of those issues. I do think that we need to make sure that if for the sake of the country, we're protected from our next attack from a foreign adversary in relation to our elections. And I got to tell you, I am very thankful for your contribution, Barb. Thank you so much. You're always very grounded and very thoughtful in your approach. And I think that is, really important and refreshing. And it is just fantastic to have an in-depth discussion and analysis with you.
Thanks, Renato. Always happy to talk with you and Patty. And I always enjoy listening to the podcast. I always learn something from you and your guests.
Thank you for joining us for this episode of On Topic. Please subscribe to this podcast, go to your app and review the podcast, and join us for our next episode. I'm Renato Mariotti. Until next time, let's stay on topic.